Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Hello everybody, welcome along to a very special Tarlhurst End Podcast. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetarlhurstend.com. We're still smack bang in the middle of summer, so the show is still on a bit of a hiatus. However, if you haven't yet checked out our end of season review show, I very much encourage you to go and do so. It should be above or below this episode, depending on how you stack your podcasts via whatever app you choose to use. However, we do have some content to bring you this summer, and I've been teasing this one for a while. You wanted him? We went out and got him. The man behind the microphone on match days, DJ Mega Party, otherwise known to just about everybody else in the world as Darren Bavister. Now, he talks us through how he got the job in the first place, how he got into announcing, the reaction he received when he first took the job, and how he had to change his style a bit after some of the feedback of which, of course, unfortunately went over the mark. And Darren talks a little bit about that and the effect that that had on him personally and on his family. So I encourage you to check that out and listen. Major thanks to him for giving up the time. Now, this was an interview we recorded way back in January. I think it was just after the FA Cup defeat at Old Trafford to Manchester United. So that should give you a little bit of context as to why we don't touch on certain subjects like him giving us the announcements before we played Huddersfield in the playoff final. We obviously did a bit on the microphone there and how the end of season went with the Fulham playoff game and so on and so on. So as I said, this was recorded back in January, so excuse some of the slightly dated references. I'll try to nip them out where possible, but a couple might still be hanging around. So again, big thanks to Darren for giving up his time and for the club for allowing us to have a chat with him. So hope you enjoy it. As far as we're concerned on the Tarlhurst End, as mentioned, this podcast is on a bit of a hiatus for the time being while we recharge those batteries, but thetarlhurstend.com is in full swing. Lots of preview material. We keep it up to date with all the latest news and speculation on the transfer front, all the new contract details, lots of bits and pieces. Still tidying up a few little bits and pieces of review from last year as well. So we may be going to sleep a little bit on this feed, but yeah, head over to thetarlhurstend.com and get involved. And on that note, if you want to get involved ahead of the new season, please drop us an email, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. We're always, always, always on the lookout for new writers. I will be putting up a post in the next couple of weeks detailing some of the more regular vacancies we have. But even if it's just a one-off article idea that you've got, drop us an email or send us a tweet to @thetarlhurstend. This is a website by the fans, for the fans, and it will always continue to be so. So please, again, get those thoughts in. And likewise, if you are one of the elite circle that are donating to us via patreon.com, again, so much, I've got so much time for you. Mega thanks to you all. Head over to patreon.com/thetarlhurstend. That's patreon.com/thetarlhurstend, and just donate whatever you can. It is our digital tip jar. It is the sort of thing where you go, do you know what? I've got loads of other stuff today. I really, you know, can't be doing with writing an article today. And then you see that the people so appreciate the content and so appreciate the work that you go, you know what, I'm going to get on the keyboard, I'm going to get behind the mic and get something out there. So yeah, thank you very much indeed to all of those who lend their financial support, and again, the moral support, and everything you do as a wider listenership and readership is very much appreciated. You keep us going. And anyway, with that sentimentality out of the way, let's get into the interview. This is DJ Mega Party. It is Darren Bavister. After the show as well, I will just give a few brief thoughts on some of the news issues that we've had around the club over the past few weeks. But in the meantime, here's that interview.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
I'm coming to you live from inside the depths of the Medeski Stadium. We are in the very nice looking Players Lounge for, again, as mentioned, a special interview. Now, a few months ago, we spoke to Adam Benson and Mark Bradley, and during that interview, we mentioned a man who's been a topic of a fair amount of conversation on the internet and social media, the Reading PA announcer, otherwise known to many as DJ Mega Party. We mentioned, and I spoke to Adam afterwards, and I said, well, is there any chance that he fancies coming onto the show? And Adam has made that happen. So I'm delighted to be joined now by the man, the myth, the legend himself, that is DJ Mega Party. Now, before we get any further, I want to get the elephant out of the room. What is your actual name?
Well, first off, a very warm welcome, and thank you to for the invite, Dan. And of course, a very warm welcome to our listeners. Well, my name is Darren Bavister. I am from Bracknell originally. Born and bred, born in Reading. Myself, obviously, my sister was born in Heatherwood, so I'm a local lad at heart. So, Darren Bavister is the name. In the other areas that I work, I'm otherwise known as Bavvy.
Bavvy. So, in which case, what was your reaction to the DJ Megapie sync? Now, I'll hold my hands up. I sent the original tweet coining the name, and I didn't. It's one of those things where sometimes a nickname catches on, sometimes it goes down like a dead horse and it doesn't catch on. Mm-hmm. This is one that just seems to have caught on.
Right.
What did you think when you first started, when that was sort of brought to your attention?
It made me laugh, and it does now. I warm to it. I'm certainly not offended by it. So if it was used to do that, it hasn't happened. I'd like to embrace it. I think it's comical. I think it's funny. I think it's warm. It's humorous. I've been called a lot worse.
I'm as we all have, anybody that dares venture an opinion of their own or does any sort of public work, unfortunately, has to deal with that, especially in today's social media and Twitter and Facebook and all that sort of thing. But let's go back to the start before we talk about the job you're doing now. So how did you actually end up in this job as Reading's PA announcer? What's your sort of background? Say you're a local lad. How did you get here?
Okay, so I am the announcer, or I was the announcer for the Bracknell Bees ice hockey team. I would have been in my 25th season this year. Sadly, we parted company last season. So 24 years in the hot seat as an announcer of ice hockey, just up the road at the John Nike Leisure Sport Complex. Rest in peace, Mr. Nike. Around about 10 years ago, I was also invited to go down to do the Basingstoke Bison. The two teams played at different levels at the time. One was in the English Premier League and one was in the Elite League, still is. That's the background for myself. How did I get invited and introduced to Reading? Well, Adam introduced me. He gave me a call. Our paths have crossed 7-8 years ago when I was invited to be the pitch side stroke match day announcer for Masters Football. If anybody has never seen Masters Football, this is the one that was broadcast on Sky with the retired players.
Loved it.
Absolutely.
Loved it.
Fantastic event. And the thing that people remember the most is the blue carpet.
Yes.
So it's exactly that. Oh, is that this is the blue carpet game? Yeah, that's the one. So I was brought in to bring some of what ice hockey stroke American sports and how that it is dealt with as an entertainment to the Masters Football. So Adam and I worked together for that, and he gave me the call, as we know, a couple of years ago, and said, Darren, I know you're a busy man. Is this something that would interest you?
So how on earth did you get into announcing in the first place? You mentioned you nearly clocked up 25 years doing ice hockey, but how do you get into that sort of field in the first place? It's not sort of your usual sort of career path when you leave school. What do you want to do? I want to be in the announce booth.
No.
Major sporting event.
This is, it was one of those it just happened moments. Right place, right time. I started watching the Bracknell Bees when the rink was first opened. Friends of mine and myself, we used to watch the Bracknell Tigers as well. So we were very much the American sport. We leant towards that as opposed to other sports, more traditional sports. And as it happened, I was rather vocal, let's say. As a fan, used to stand in block one, if anybody's ever been to the rink, holler and shout. And it's a very, very family orientated sport. No foul or abusive language, no inappropriate gestures. And I got a bit of a reputation of being a little bit gobby is the only other way to describe it. At the same time, I was very much a music fan. So I used to watch the sport with my friends. We would then follow that with the skating session after, and this would happen week in, week out. And this is, you know, I go back, I was 17, 18. And then I struck up a rapport with the then DJ, who was the match announcer at the time, Mike Greaves. And the long story cut very, very short was that he was off to travel the world. He was partnered with a young lady who was a skating professional. They were opening a rink down in Cyprus, and he was no longer going to be there. The question I had for him, which was a completely genuine and innocent question, was, well, who's going to be doing what you do? And he had actually put me forward for it. I knew absolutely nothing about playing music. I knew nothing about how to cue a record. I was just a gobby fan who was passionate about his team, and I fell into it, and I did lots of things very, very wrong. But I was a fan, and I think that came through, and I just tailored as I grew into the event, and I grew as a person. I just tailored what I was doing and how I was doing it. And that was me. And as I say, I was at Bracknell for 24 years. I'm still at Basingstoke. I'm now in my 11th season there. And I love not only the announcing, but the passion that fans show for any sport.
You're sort of you are the mouthpiece in a way for the football club. I mean, you're the last voice that Reading fans hear before the team plays, and I imagine it's the same down at the rink as well. But you know, you sort of mentioned you sort of fell into this job. I mean, do you still have a day job? Because I mean, the football season is only 23 home games plus a couple of cup games and same for hockey. What do you do for your day job?
Okay, I do have a full time job. I have a job that's a managerial position. I live in Basingstoke now, so I do the very short commute to Andover. I work for a family-run business. It's an employment agency for industrial workers. I won't bore you with that.
Basically, it's about as far away from being a PA announcer as possible.
Absolutely. And prior to that, I'm relatively new in that particular role. I was working in the office equipment industry and had been since I pretty much came out of education. So you're right, it's very, very different.
I mean, it's fascinating to me how you sort of end up in such a completely different sphere. You mentioned sort of going from the Gobby fan to being the PA announcer, and you sort of end up at Reading. We'll move on to that sort of side of things now, if you don't mind, in terms of, so what is your responsibilities at Reading? Because a lot of people will say, well, are you the guy playing the music? Are you the guy that decides what we do at halftime? Are you the guy that decides X, Y, Z? Talk us through what your actual responsibilities are at Reading.
So from game day, it's pretty much as soon as the turnstiles are open, that's it. I'm there and I'm live if required. We have music playing around in the background until one of our sister companies comes in and helps us out with that. As soon as team news comes through and the team is announced, it's my role to announce that. And that's our opportunity to welcome the away fans and try and start to tease the atmosphere into the Medeski. And then, as the build-up to the kickoff happens, we switch over to a company that we use to put the graphics on the boards, the graphics on the big screen, the music that is played. This is all done by a partnership.
Yeah, so do you have any control over, say, the music playlist or anything like that, or is that completely out of your hands?
No, that's completely out of my hands, yeah. Would I like to have a little bit more of an inset in saying that? Yeah, probably would. I've got my own opinion of what I would like to do on game day. It's certainly not far from what Adam Benson would like to do, but we think it's probably too early days to start implementing that. So regarding music and anything else, I'm really just the messenger.
Yeah, I mean, how do you have to prepare sort of a lot of scripts beforehand? How far in advance? How does your day start? I mean, are you prepping from the end of the last week, or is it a case of you get the information on game day, you get a couple of hours to figure out what you're going to say and then go for it?
No, it's not quite as dramatic as that. I get the information probably a couple of hours before I start to make the journey to the stadium. Sometimes it can be the day prior. Within my script, I receive what the activity will be at half time. If there's anything in particular out of the ordinary, for example, the other day, you know, we might have had the marching band, Remembrance Day in particular, where that's planned well in advance, so all the pieces fit in place without the opportunity for something to go wrong. So it's a slick operation. There's lots of people peddling frantically in the background prior to game day.
So the swan effect. It's all graceful on top.
Exactly that. Well, we hope it looks that way when we're out there. So regarding scripts, the script of my delivery prior to kickoff, I'll receive that and I may tweak that just slightly so I'm more comfortable with it. The scripts at half time, again, I'll receive them probably a couple of hours prior to arriving. I'll just make it my own slightly. And everything else really is sort of club and club decided.
You mentioned you came from ice hockey background, and I think from my own personal point of view, that to me helps sort of explains your style, especially in the early days.
Yeah,
listening to your first few games, it was quite a gear shift from what we'd had before. Put it that way.
Yeah,
and a lot of people were just like, "What is going on?" And I know it came at a time of massive upheaval at the club in general. We touched on things with Adam and Mark in the previous interview that we did a few months ago. But How did you handle it coming in? Did you come to a few Reading games before, or was literally your first experience at the Badeski your first game as a PA man?
No, I've been to a couple of games. We've brought the club over on a couple of occasions.
Okay.
So we think that, I mean, there's a club, everybody knows, it is a family-based club.
Yeah.
And with any sport, you need to entice new fans in, because you have that natural attrition anyway. People move out of the area, people fall out of love of it.
No, absolutely.
And you have to bring new blood into it. So I had been to two games prior with the club. I'd actually been to four, because one of the parents of a child that I coached was one of the Reading sponsors, Legend Alliance.
Oh, okay.
And as a lovely gesture, Jay Gambling of Legend Alliance had given us the box over Christmas period for the volunteers. So we sat and watched the game. So it wasn't new to me. Had I taken in much of what the atmosphere and the ambience was? I probably didn't, really. Mm. So when Reading said, OK, come on in, you go, and you're right, absolutely. If we go back, I can see from the other side of the fence what that is going on here, because it was a stark difference. My remit was to come in and just be me and deliver in the fashion that I'm accustomed
to. Yeah, because that's one of the questions we've had from Nathan Paul. He's asked, was your initial approach an instruction from the club, or was it your own decision? Did they sort of give you free rein to say, Darren, go stamp your mark on it? Or did they sort of say, well, we want this kind of style from you?
Mm-hmm. No, it was, Darren, do what you do, deliver in the way that you deliver. Adam's, and as I mentioned earlier, our paths had crossed. So Adam was expecting the same delivery that I give at the Basingstoke Bison, then at the Bracknell Bees, the other playoff events that I'm involved in, and what I was doing at Masters Football. I am sure, and I'll put money on it now, and in hindsight, Adam or the team here at Reading would have probably given me a little bit more guidance in saying, right, do what you do, but we need to just tweak this and we need to adjust that. So that's what's happened over the period. I've taken on guidance, I've taken on feedback, and realised that my delivery was so stark and so different to what was going before me, and what, more importantly, people are accustomed to, not just here at Reading,
but across.
Yeah. Some people don't even like MCs full stop.
No, you have had a few bits of that in general.
Exactly, and I understand that now. I didn't before, but the remit for me was to come in and do what I do in the way that I do it, and then we just fine-tuned it after.
What was one of the sort of, you talk about you fine-tuned it and things, there are a couple of examples of things you look back on now that you were doing and you think, oh, I wouldn't do that anymore.
So what I may have done previously, and when I first started, was just bring the experience and habits that I had previously. So, for example, wearing number 31 in goal for Reading, Ali Al-Habsi.
Yeah.
Defending the back line in his usual shirt number 2. It's Chris Gunter. Now, clearly that's not the norm for any football stadium up and down the country. So now the delivery is much more precise, and I understand what the fans' expectations are.
Yeah.
So whilst the delivery is still a little bit up there, still lively, still enthusiastic, it will be much more direct and much more what the fans expect.
Yeah.
31, Ali Al-Habsi. Then the opportunity for our fans to celebrate the fact that Ali's playing. Then we move swiftly on to number 2, Chris Gunter. Then and then, again, the opportunity for the cheers to accept him, celebrate he's out there. So whilst the delivery is very similar, the padding out has been removed.
Yeah, less is more sort of thing. And to be fair, Nate also added in his question, he said as well, it's brave of you to sort of come on the show. And he also says, you've improved a hell of a lot. Never see anything negative about him these days. So there is that praise. And I think there is acknowledgement. Every other game, I'd be sort of thinking, and I'd send a tweet out saying, what's going on? But now you blend into the background. And I mean that in the best possible way, mm-hmm, in that mm-hmm. I get and fans get the information they need from you.
Yep.
And okay, you've still got a great bombastic delivery and it can bring in people that want that side of things, but if you're there just there for the information, you're getting that in a fashion you can easily digest. The PR you got around yourself wasn't amazing to the start. I mean, do you take a lot of that on board, or have you got a sort of resolve in yourself that I'm happy with what I'm doing and sort of plow on, or do you sort of read everything and then try and work your way through it?
Right, now, this is quite an emotive question, because I'm fairly busy on social media. And whilst I'm closer to 50 than I am 40, I've grown up in a world where it's come in and I haven't resisted it. So, and I've got boy, you know, my eldest, like I say, is 15. I have to understand it and know it. Just for his safety and my peace of mind and my wife's peace of mind as a parent. Now, I was really quite taken aback at some of the things that were said about me. It upset me. Did it bother me? Yes, it did, most definitely. But I've been ostracized a little bit through what I do and you know, again, it's talking about ice hockey, which is not really what people are listening in for, but I did things very differently when I started as an announcer as ice hockey, and it was very different from the traditional way of doing things. And I got written about because it was paper media then, and not in a favourable way. But here we are now, 25 years later, and everything is so much more immediate. So I went on to the, you know, the social media platforms just for general feedback, naively, because I didn't understand how passionate certain fans and certain groups were. And it hurt. It did hurt. So you say you're right, you know, you're a front of house, you're a PA announcer, you're out there, so you've got to be able to take roll with the punches. I didn't realise those punches would be so low. I'm big enough and ugly enough to go, okay, that's fine. So when it settled for a bit, and I took some guidance from the club, there are social media policies within the club which are above board and correct to protect the club as a business, the club's reputation. So I couldn't respond. I wanted to. If I had responded, it would have been wholly inappropriate because I would have matched an inappropriate gesture with another. Nah, it took a little while for it to settle down. It was when people were actually contacting me directly and sending me PMs and DMs through the other media platforms that I use for me personally and for the youth football club, because it's very important for youth football clubs because it's immediate. We use it to support our sponsors. We use it to put news out there. When people are actually contacting me and saying things that are wholly inappropriate, if they were to say them to me face to face in a public space, they would probably be arrested for them. To actually have to take that, to lock down my social media profiles, which I enjoy using, shocked me. But the club supported me, and so a couple of conversations with the guys here, actually I broadened my shoulders and I went, let's not go searching for this. Let's just ignore this. We can block this. We can move this away. And as I've been around this particular role for such a long time now, and I'm an adult, and I think that's very important. I'm an adult, and I have to teach my values to my children and the children that I coach and I support, because their parents trust me and my other volunteers in that role. Is I have to say, you have to rise above this. And a phrase somebody told me was, an empty vessel makes the most noise. So whilst you may have a dozen, 20, 100 people who have come at you at this direction with this plan of attack, that means there are thousands of other people who actually couldn't care less, or who are actually really enjoying what you're doing. So I realise as well that they're not actually attacking me as an individual, as a person, as Darren. They're attacking me as the delivery.
Yeah.
That's all they're doing. They're attacking how I deliver the message. So it is shooting the messenger, but the message is just being delivered in a certain fashion. Now, it is, and it's a real cliche, you can't please people all the time. But the fact that people noticed that I was here, that it was different, that it wasn't what had gone before, was what the club wanted. And it's exactly now the fine-tuning, and hopefully this podcast will make people realise that I'm not just the guy that turns up, does his bit, thank you very much, goodbye. I'm a guy that is passionate about the club, that stands in the tunnel, whose heart beats just that little bit faster when the guys come out, who beams from ear to ear when he sees Danny Williams pat a mascot on the head, or where a referee throws a ball at a mascot who headers it back to him, who Ali Al-Habsi is stood there, who smiles as a parent, because that's a wonderful moment. I'm not just that voice. And that those attacks were uncalled for. But I've risen above that now.
The very fact, I think, that we're sitting here now and you're talking about it is a massive credit to yourself, because I can imagine there are a lot of people, especially because you mentioned, you know, this isn't a full-time job. It's not like if you walked away, you'd be giving up 50, 60 grand a year, let's call it. You know, it's a part-time job. It's a bit of a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, I think, would have just gone, do you know what? Stuff them, I'm off. That if they want someone different, they can have someone different. In fact, you've stuck it out and not just sort of entrenched yourself here, but as mentioned, you've gone and got recognition from outside sources. I think there's a massive credit. And as someone that was slightly critical, I like to think that we here at the Tarlhurst End didn't go to any of those low such depths.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think there's a difference between the constructive criticism you get and being able to deal with that and move on, and then some of the outright abuse. And I think it's again, speaking personally, I think it's sad that some people go the direct abuse route on social media, wherever it is. I think it's quite cowardly, the fact that some people resort to a direct message or something. You never say it to someone on the street.
No.
But I'd say it's massive credit to you. You've come through it. And the very fact that, apart from having to deal with this interview, I've not, I mean this with the greatest respect, I've not thought about you for the last 6 to 12 months.
Fantastic.
Because you've just faded completely for me as one of those traditional football fans into the background.
Right.
Which is perfect for, I think, what a lot of people want from the PA announcer. But at the same time, you're doing enough so that so those new people that come to the game, families and stuff, and recognition. So I just wanted to say well done.
Thank you.
For what it's worth for me. But when you first turned up, I mean, you were replacing a long-time PA man. You came in. How much of the football experience had you come from? You mentioned you did Masters football, but had you been to many sort of full-size... Are you a football fan?
Football, I am a Liverpool fan at heart. Okay, let's get that out there.
Come on.
let's be honest, I've got all my cards on the table here.
Yeah.
I grew up in an era, you know, I'm 46 now, you know, when Liverpool ruled Europe. And it came through... I inherited it because my granddad... again, you know, he lived in Bracknell. I was the firstborn. I was the firstborn boy. He was Liverpool. He was a Scouser himself, and he was red as opposed to blue.
Okay. You've got some connection then. We'll let you off.
Exactly. Now, sadly, when he passed away, my love of the game also passed away. I was, and this will all tie in a moment, I'm sure. I was the short, slightly overweight, not very talented footballer of the late 70s. And in those days, if you wished to play football, you were left on the touchline.
I found myself in goal in a very similar position.
Okay, so you can see where I'm coming from.
Yes.
Here. So I wasn't tall enough to be in goal, and the goalie they had was good.
Oh.
Okay, so that's where I stood. So I had no real affiliation to football, per se. Especially as the fact that my dad was a Luton Town fan.
Mm.
So clearly there's no other football involved in the family. However, when my firstborn arrived and I met my wife, the family, you could see that at barbecues and family gatherings, the topic matter, first and foremost, when the guys are over there burning the meat, is football. And you've got two choices. You can either stand there and twiddle your thumbs, or you can actually try and make conversation. Now, my wife's family are absolutely fantastic, even though they are Chelsea fans. So we put this together, and then my firstborn wants to play a sport. Deep down inside, I wanted him to be an ice hockey player, because that's what I knew best. And I thought, fantastic. But he warms to football. Now, he's approaching 15. And he's actually a very good, talented footballer. He's as lean as a butcher's dog. He's very smart around the game. And at the time, He was playing in a club that was very, whether you want to call it traditional, whether you want to call it old-fashioned. It was one of those things, and I didn't agree as a parent on how he was coached. So I thought the only thing I can do is stand back and let him get on with it, or I can find another club for him. So I looked around at other clubs, couldn't find them. So I couldn't find a club that fitted in with my busy lifestyle. So the only way I thought I could change things was actually to go in to the club and change things. So I became a coach. I still am now. The coach then becomes a manager. And whilst my eldest is still playing football and he's doing it otherwise, it then comes to his brother. So his brother comes along 5 years later. The transition between the eldest and the youngest being born, I start to become a football fan. I start to find...
Well, you're around the game.
Exactly that. Now, I start to find the love again for Liverpool, because I've got the luxury, and some may say it's torturous, but I've got the luxury of being around former professionals of the game with the Masters football. So I've now got the Masters football on one side. I'm in and around that game. I've got the legends. I've got the luxury to be sitting with them in a bar, having a drink, eating, and doing the other bits and pieces, the mega party bits, let's say.
Yeah.
We add that in there. And my eldest is in the game. And it just
seeps into you.
It just, yeah. Exactly. That's exactly the phrase. That's a perfect phrase. It's seeping into me. Now, my younger one comes along, and I think I don't really want him to be put into the same scenario that his eldest brother was. But I'm now a coach. So I look at all the other teams around. Can he be coached in an environment that I feel as a parent is healthy, that I feel as a coach is healthy, to get the best out of him, because he wants to play football?
Yeah.
Because he sees his older brother playing it. And he watches it on telly. And his relatives talk about it. It's a common ground. It is. It's our national sport. It's the common denominator. But I couldn't find that. I couldn't find that anywhere. So I thought, well, there's only one other thing to do. I'll just start another team. And that's what I did. So I'm now in this club. I've relinquished my responsibility of a coach for the older boy. I'm now starting up an intro to soccer school for children who are school year one and school year R. And we put a few flyers out, and next thing you know, we've got 10 children. And then 2 weeks later, we've got 15. And then we've got 27. And then we've got 32. And these are boys and girls. And what was first and foremost in my mind is I do not want these children to experience the coaching style that my eldest went through. And I most certainly do not want those children to experience what I experienced.
I mean, what was the problem? We're digressing away from Reading, but
no,
it's a good topic, because from my own personal experience, I remember going through a coach system, and I joined a club, I think, about the age of 7 or 8, just when I got the football bug. And it was managed by a guy who had actually played a handful of games for Liverpool. His son played in the team. And it was very much we've got to win these games. I turned up to training every week. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. I was pretty poor. I was a goalkeeper that was average at best.
Yep.
There was a couple of goalkeepers ahead of me, but just never got a chance. And over the course of 3 or 4 years, I just turned up to training every week, never got a game. And then by the age of 12, 13, I was like, well, this is just for me. And you drift away from the game.
Yep.
Was that the sort of thing you found happening? Or was it more a case of the actual coaching technique style?
It was. It was the management style. It was bullying. It was verbal bullying of children. And I just did not agree with it. Now, what used to happen is exactly what you alluded to. If you weren't very good, you would just be left to the sidelines and drop off and go down the edges. Now, I was in that boat. I was completely in that boat. And the game was very different, because you rightly say you start at 7, but the game was different. You would go pretty much straight into 11 aside. Now things are very, very different. You've got your 5 aside, then you go 7, then you go 9, then you go 11. And it's the FA have put a lot of work into it. Now, it goes against the tradition.
Yeah.
And I won't deny that some people who are traditionalists don't see that as the right way to go. But what I wanted my child and the other children that I was coaching is to not go through what I went through, where they were scared to be creative, where they were scared to make their own decisions, where they were nervous
about upsetting the coach, or
upsetting the coach, upsetting their parents, letting themselves and their team down. So before you know it, we fast track, and exactly what you said, we're kind of digressing from the original question. We fast track, and here we are now. My youngest son is now in an under 10s. Of that original team, the original setup, all those, you know, under six, so we're talking 5-6 years ago, there's now three teams in that age group, boys and girls. We've now got, I've got myself sitting, and I'm not, this is not bragging by far, you know, I'm now the chairman of that club. And the club we've taken with a group of the right people in the right place with the right attitude, all volunteers, who've taken that club from three age groups to another soccer school of under sixes and under sevens. We've got three under sevens teams. We've got two under eights teams. We've got two under nines teams. We've got three under tens. We've got an under 14, two under 11s, my apologies to them, an under 14s team and an under 15s team, all being coached and mentored and finding the love of the game, no matter where they sit in ability playing.
That's what football should be about. Football should be about the fun side of things. It's great if you go on and have a fantastic career or you win trophies, but you've got to love it.
Absolutely. So we now kind of go back to the original question, which is, am I a football fan? I wasn't. I certainly am now.
Yeah.
Very, very much so. The style that Reading play, that Yap's got them playing, is wonderful. The style that Klopp's got Liverpool playing, I find exciting. Mm. I find the Premier League exciting. If you had said to me, Darren, in 5 years' time, on your commute to work, you'll be listening to Talk Sport. When you make your journey on a Saturday morning for me is, I'll get up and I'll coach. My youngest one also has found hockey, which is brilliant. It's
nice.
Another sport. It's a great sport. It's a team sport. I'll coach, I'll shower, I'll shave, I'll put my Reading kit on. If anybody had said, Darren, you'd be doing that on a Saturday morning and then listening to Radio Berkshire on the way in for the build-up of the game, would never have believed them. Never.
Of course, what you're also listening to is the Tyler Sen podcast, obviously.
No, I've got that on a memory stick.
Excellent, thank you.
On stream.
There you go. I'm slowly sliding the tenor across the table right now. Before we move on, I do want to talk just a little bit more. I mean, can people still get involved with the club? I mean, where's your club based? And are you still taking on kids in the area?
Absolutely. We are a Basingstoke-based team with a Hatch Warren Phoenix. We just invite everybody over. This is not to distract from any of the other clubs in Basingstoke, because we're lucky, we're in an abundance. But of course, if children want to come along, then the doors are open. Mm. And if the doors aren't open, what we will always say to people is, this club is a really good club to go to.
Excellent.
This is a club that if my child wasn't playing here, I would take them there. Because it is football. Football is the common denominator here. The style of clubs vary, even at such a young age, just as we see in the Championship week in, week out. Absolutely. Doors are always open, because we certainly don't want people wishing they were playing when all they're doing is sitting in front of a screen.
No, good to get as many people. Have you got a website?
We have. It is hatchwarrenphoenix.co.uk.
Got a question. You mentioned sort of reading out the team news.
Yep.
Matt Castle wants to know, who's your favourite Reading player and why?
Okay, I actually have two.
Okay.
McShane.
Yep.
And Gunter. Okay, the reason for those, Paul wears his heart on a sleeve. He would play with one leg removed if he had to. He's passionate.
Let's hope he doesn't have to.
Well, let's hope he doesn't have to. No, absolutely. But the prime example, you know, he's gone down in the box, he's nursing an injury, but he wants to be out there. I am sure without any shadow of a doubt, it is the old cliche, you cut him in half, you know, blue and white would come out. He's a fantastic captain. He's a fantastic role model. He has a maturity about him. He has an air of gravitas about him and an aura that is exactly what a club needs. I also take my hat off to Chris Gunter, because his athleticism up and down those wings, the creative play that he brings to the game, he's playing the modern game. You know, he's playing as that wing-back role, the first line of attack. And if it doesn't go right, you never see him give up. You never see him give up. And it goes back to the first couple of games that I saw when I was here as a guest in the VIP box and enjoying the hospitality of Legend, and then going and watching it with the kids, is you noticed him. You saw him out there. And then how he held himself when he was wearing his Welsh shirt as well over the Euros, phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And it's probably a little bit of the fact that my boys both play a defensive role. So I watch that more than most. But those two, for me, standout players.
Absolutely. You also, as well as doing your job here at Reading, you kind of got the own version of the PA man's international call-up.
Right,
because
yes.
The FA, again, coming up in the interview that we did with Mark and Adam, mentioned the fact that you'd been invited by the FA to mm-hmm. do some of the PA duties at Wembley. I mean, what was that like? Because you go from a rink holding about 1,000 people maybe?
To a
25,000-seat stadium to an 80,000, 90,000-seat stadium. I mean, what was that like? And how did it all come about?
Okay, well, it came about in a way that the contact at the FA was here at the Middlesbrough game. And again, it's just the luxury. They have their go-to guy who's there all the time, and he's fantastic, absolutely exceptional. At the time, he was involved with an England game, and the non-league finals were coming up at Wembley. So Reading were asked, could the FA approach me and ask if I'd be interested? Well, that's a silly question, really. You know, to be an announcer at Wembley is just absolutely fantastic. It's the pinnacle. The difference really is it's kind of like the Medeski Stadium and Reading game day on steroids, because there's so much going on. To put on a show of that size in a stadium, irrelevant of whether it's full up or not, everything from the moving screens to the HD screens to the interviews in and out of the stadium to going live for the team news, and then you add in Ronaldo the Bull from Hereford who's looking at you like he wants to eat you for lunch, and you're doing a piece to camera
with your back to him.
Well, I kept one eye on him because there was a lot of him and not very much of me, so to do that and in your ear you're hearing all the other factors going on because you have an in-ear piece all going off, and you're waiting for your cue and your voice is coming over the PA at Wembley, and your face is really a face to be locked away, is on the screens at Wembley, and you add that all together, and it was a beautiful day, and it was a fantastic event, was just something that I'll never ever forget. But that in itself just led on to the Stadium of Light gig that I did as well. So you've got 1 minute, you're right, you know, I'm in a freezing cold ice rink with six layers on, and I've got 1,000, 1,500 fans, you know, cheering on their team, completely different sport, completely different environment, to the Medeski, again, a slightly different take on entertainment, to Wembley, to then be at the Stadium of Light in the gantry, to your right being Glenn Hoddle, you know, doing his TV piece, to a completely sold out stadium, with the Aussies bouncing up there in the corner to doing announcing England v Australia, and then to know full well that whether people like it or not, when you look back in history, you've announced Rashford's first goal for England, and to call out England there as well, that's something I'm never going to forget. I'm never going to live down. If I never do it again, at least I've done it. For me now, the pinnacle would be hopefully one day the phone rings and it's England at Wembley, but it's lovely. It's a compliment, and I take it.
Well, and as I said, you know, I'll be the first. I said at the interview, you know, I've been critical of you at times, but the very fact that such a massive organisation has invited you to do that on a couple of different occasions shows mm-hmm. that you're doing something right. Mm-hmm. And I think it's difficult because I said, I come into this interview as a 30-year-old guy that's been going to football for 20 years and is used to a certain way of doing things. But you forget, I think, sometimes, and other listeners, I'm sure this will be tweaking with them, that it's a completely different audience. You're not just catering to your traditional football fans anymore. You've got families, you've got young kids, and they get excited by the sort of razzmatazz and you've got to sort of inspire them. It's okay, some fans might sit there and go, yeah, I just want this guy to read the team news out. But is that going to inspire necessarily especially if the game is bad?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the things around the game that keep them coming back.
It is exactly that. And that's exactly what I view. When I first started announcing, my eldest was 5. So I'd take him to a game. And my remit, my own personal remit, and my goal that I'd set out was, if I can see my son on the other side of the stadium, the other side of the arena, and he's yawning, I'm not doing my job, because I can't change the product that is going on, the sport, the game. I can't change that. And now we fast forward to here at football and the Medeski, and the guys here at Reading have got a very, very similar focus on that. You can't change the game and you can't change the weather, but you can try and influence the entertainment that's before, middle and end. So if you've got a new fan coming along, irrelevant of whether they're 5, 10, 15, 25, you can't, again, impact that bit in the middle. But if they've had entertainment in between what is going on in the middle, and all being well, the bit in the middle is exciting as well, they'll have fond memories for that and they'll come back. We live in an instant world nowadays where when we want something, it's there. And this is the bit that we've got to embrace. And I've learnt now over time through coaching and through feedback from the guys here at Reading and listening to myself as well, is that we've got to deliver to the core. And that is the football fan who expects to be able to get the same pint from the same place, eat the same pie, arrive at the same time and sit in the same seat. We still need that core because they're important.
They're the lifeblood of the game.
Yeah. They are, exactly. They've been there through the highs and the lows, and they keep coming back. And we do not, and I most certainly do not, want to ostracise them. I want to make sure that they're still catered for. But what we've got to do to grow the club, grow the sport, is make it more entertaining around the outside. Whether you like that or not, it has to happen.
I remember coming to my first game, and I watched Reading get beat 3-1 at home by Oldham in the FA Cup. And I can't remember a lot of the game, but what I can remember is the music getting played on the tannoy at Elm Park. I remember some guy coming round with a tray. You know the trays he used to carry around on the terraces?
Yes, yes.
Of all the food. I remember that and just the noise and the atmosphere and stuff around that. And I think, again, it's maybe people of, myself including other people, that maybe have a bit of a pop, I suppose, need to remember, because it is those sort of things that younger fans remember, and it's the entertainment factor. I will go back, though, to the team, reading out the team news, because that is, I suppose, one of those things for the people, the traditional fan. Yep. And a question for you. A lot of people have sent us in questions asking, why does he pronounce names in this way, that way, or the other way? Do you speak to the players and get how they want their name to be pronounced, or is it just left to you to give it your best shot?
Okay. Away teams. If we look at the away teams, especially when we call the team news out, and there's some real tongue ties in there, we will always talk, first and foremost, because it's more convenient, to the guys who are doing the recording for them on the gantry.
Okay.
If they're a real struggler and it's really difficult, then we will typically talk to their bench. So I'll write that down phonetically. I've only got 2 cracks of the whip to get this right. The team news, or if something happens, a substitution, a goal score, something along those lines. Home team, again, it's finding out, A, how it's pronounced phonetically, make sure we try and get it right. And then if we're not getting it right, just to correct it. Prime example being the Manchester United legend. You know, is it Andrew or is it Andy?
Cole.
You know, exactly. And when it comes to it, when you speak to him, which I've had the luxury to do, I'm an interview him as well, he said, I don't care. And it's much the same for the players. Funny enough, they don't care. A lot of the time, they don't even hear it. because they've got game face on. And again, it's a luxury of the job
so
that I do.
So you don't get a Jan Kermit coming up to you and saying, pronounce my name right.
No.
I would do it in a French accent there, but I know better.
No. And sometimes you can get into a force of habit, because when you've read something two or three times, it becomes a habit. And you may have picked up a bad habit. So until somebody corrects you, you'll just carry on doing that. It's the potato-potato scenario. You know, it does boil down. There is one player whose mum has called in and corrected me.
Excellent.
But I'm not going to digress.
Oh, can you not give us any hint?
I can't.
Ah, damn it. Okay, well, it's good, though, because, again, though, that's the thing. So if you're listening, one of the players out there, and you think that Darren is pronouncing your name wrong, get in touch and we'll pass it along.
Absolutely.
A quick point on, again, just on the team news as well. We did have a question from Andy Stewart saying, why is the away team never announced? Now, I know from being in the stadium, it is announced before the players are out.
Mm-hmm.
But why isn't it announced? Because it used to certainly be announced in very quick fashion, albeit, when the teams were out. Is this something, is that your decision? Is it something that's coming from above? Because when the players are out, we only get the home team.
Okay, you're right. It's red at the beginning. So as soon as the team news has arrived, the team sheets, both teams are announced, as we alluded to earlier. Why it's not read out again is not a my decision. But if I had the choice, I wouldn't read it out either.
Okay.
This is our stadium. You know, this should be our fortress. This is not the opposition's opportunity to cheer on their team. That's up to them. They may have travelled hundreds of miles, been stuck in awful traffic. Fair play to them. They've taken their hat off. They're supporting their team. Brilliant. Their incentive is already there to cheer on their team. I don't want to give them any more opportunity to rally to the cause. Our opportunity, and to do with timings as well, from when the players come out to the handshakes, to the referees being announced, to sponsorship being announced, it's quite restrictive.
Yeah, you've only got about 5 minutes, maybe?
Absolutely. And that's even tighter when the TVs are there. So why not fill all of that time and use it to the best as we possibly can to let the players know, our players, that their fans are out there, that their fans are behind them, that we are ready to cheer, so that we can rally to the cause. You know, that's how we see it. So whilst the decision isn't mine, if I was given the decision, I'd stick by what we're doing.
One of the other questions we had in from Dan as well is why has it changed from the be loud, be proud and back the boys and make some noise? Now, you've kept the back the boys and make some noise and it's come on you Royals at the end now. Was it a deliberate decision to drop part of it? Did you just want to put your own spin on things?
Okay, regarding that, we mentioned that I had a habit of padding things out. So not only would it have been be loud, be proud, I would have probably given the opportunity to say be loud, be proud, roar for the Royals, back the boys and make some noise, come on you Rs.
Yeah.
But I'd still be out there rallying the fans and half time would be blowing. So again, as we mentioned, it's a restrictive time. We have limited, so let's just go with the impact. The choice of back the boys and make some noise is taken by the club with myself. So it is something that becomes a signature chant that becomes par for the course. So when you hear that, wherever you are in the stadium, if you're making your way to the seat, if you're on the concourse, you know something's about to happen.
What's been your favourite moment so far? Because you've had a couple of seasons now. What has been your favourite moment since you've been at the club?
Now, I was a member of the club, not in the capacity that I'm in now, but I was with my family at Wembley watching the Arsenal game. Now, for me, that was, at the moment, the fondest, so far, without any shadow of a doubt. To not only the build-up and earn our position there, but actually take them to the wire. And I felt part of the club that day. I was a football fan, I was a Reading fan, and I was part of the club.
Any random moments you've had in the job so far? Either we can cast it back to your hockey days. Is there anything that's ever happened in the booth to you or on a match day we've just gone, has that really just happened? I mean, you mentioned the Bull at Wembley. I suppose that ranks pretty high.
Yes, yeah. At Reading, it wasn't that long ago, funny enough. It was the Fulham game. So I don't know whether everybody knows where we're situated in the Medeski. We're right up high, and we're looking down on the pitch. And when I started, I wouldn't know that a certain player was wearing a certain number and where they played on the pitch. I had my, because I was relatively new to it. So we have a pair of binoculars up there, high powered, and we look down on the game. So I was looking down, and I was saying, all right, that player's there and that's who he is, and becoming accustomed to it now. Then we go to the Fulham game, and the fog's starting to come down quite heavily. So Ali Al-Habsi comes out of the goal and he kicks the ball. He doesn't do a particularly good job of it. And after that, I had no idea where he was, where the ball was, whether they'd scored, whether we'd scored, where even where the linesman was. So for me, that was a little bit unusual. I think it's still early days for me to say that was a bit strange, that was a bit unique, a bit unusual. I'm sure there'll be plenty to come.
Yeah, it's the sort of a job where you will get random curveballs thrown at you. What about your future ambition? I mean, you mentioned that maybe you'd love to get the call to do a game at Wembley. Is there anything else professionally, either in your work in between PA stuff or work that you'd like to do?
The PA stuff, again, you're right, absolutely. For doing what I do, I have that luxury of I'm also used by the FA for Q&A sessions. So, you know, I'm there with Peter Shilton. I'm talking to him. I'm interviewing him. I'm doing the same for John Barnes. And obviously, as a Liverpool fan, that's fantastic. I've had the luxury, again, of working with him with the Masters Football.
How many times have you heard the rap?
Too many to mention, but I'll take my hat off to him. He knows how to milk an audience.
He does.
He was absolutely brilliant there. Aspirations, you know, England at Wembley, terrific. But for here as a club, I want to be seen as part of the club, the voice of the club. I don't want to be an irritant. I want to be part of it. I'd like to see the club moving forward and the sport moving forward to embrace a little bit more of the entertainment factor around the outside. Of course, budgets affect that as well. But I would like to be here announcing the team the day that they get promoted to the Premier League. And then remain in the Premier League.
Anything else you want to put out to the fan base out there?
No, really, it's the opportunity to be interviewed is a privilege. I take it at that. I thank you for the opportunity and certainly thank the club for putting it together. You know, really and truly is, you know, I'm here as part of the club. I've got no ulterior motive except to make sure that the support that the fans, and if I can help in any way get those fans on the edge of their seat rallying to the cause, so the boys on the pitch know that they have the support behind them come hell or high water, that I'm doing my job. That's what I'm here for.
Darren, thank you very much. I'm probably still going to call you DJ Mega Party, even though I know your name. But I will use it in the fondest of ways now.
Well, that's fine by me. I'm not easily offended, as you know.
Excellent. Well, Darren, thank you very much for giving us your time. And hopefully we'll catch up in a couple of years' time. We can talk about your experiences of us in the Premier League.
Let's hope so.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, listeners.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/TheTarlhurst.
Right, a massive thank you again to Darren for giving up his time to speak to us. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll hopefully be getting a few more people behind the scenes and former players on the show over the next few weeks, months and years. So if you've got any contact details, if you happen to be friendly with a former Reading player, drop us an email to thetarlhurstend.com and we'll do our best to try and set something up. Anyway, in the meantime, just thought I'd give a few brief thoughts on a couple of the big stories that have dominated the Reading news agenda over the past few days. As mentioned, this show is still on hiatus, so the likes of Westie and Johnny and co won't be back on until probably the end of July when we do our pre-season special. But I couldn't let an opportunity go without having a few brief words on the news, and particularly that Jaap Stam has signed a new 2-year deal at the club. I think we can all agree, fantastic business all around. Whatever your opinions are on his style of play, it is very clear that the players at the football club have bought into this system, hook, line and sinker. And you saw the results it got last season. You know, a couple of penalty kicks away from the Premier League. And that was just in his very first season. So kudos to the club and the new Chinese owners for getting this deal done. There was lots of speculation throughout last season. You know, he was being a little bit vague
in his news conferences about his future, saying, oh, I'm not going to sort it out to the summer. And, you know, lo and behold, we get to July and it's a done deal. Fantastic news. Hopefully this eases a lot of concerns. It will hopefully allow players to commit their futures to the clubs. And on that note, you've got Chris Gunter signing a new three-year deal. Again, he's not everyone's best cup of tea. He's not everyone's cup of tea. Dave Harris, I'm looking at you. But generally, you know, he's a very, very solid defender at this level. He is a player, as I wrote in the news article on thetylersen.com, that you can just plug into the team and you've got no worries. You know what you're going to get from him. Okay, he's not a superstar right back that's going to create your 10, 15 goals a season and bag five himself. He's not that type of player. But what he does do, he works tirelessly up and down that flank. You know you're going to get at least 40 games out of him. No problems off the pitch. Good leader on the pitch as well. He seems to have that respect of his teammates as well. So kudos again to the club and the Chinese owners for getting that deal done. It ends speculation linking him with Middlesbrough. So good to get those two tied down. Unfortunately, we have lost a key member of last season. Danny Williams has moved on. He's moved to Huddersfield, signing a two-year deal there. This was a deal that had been long mooted, and given his performance at Wembley against him, I can't blame David Wagner for going and signing him up. Now, again, I would have loved Danny to stay, but we talked about this a lot last season. He was one of the highest earners at the football club. He was on speculative, well, widely believed, we understand at least, to be between £30,000 and £40,000 a week, which is a lot of money for a club in the Championship, especially one that now no longer receives parachute payments. So for Reading to keep Danny, you would have had to at least match that, which is, you know, a lot of money. And if you do look at his Reading career overall, it's not that impressive for the money we've been paying him. And I think if you calculate his wages and his original transfer fee and bonuses and things, I think he's ended up costing us about £10 million for those four seasons we've had him. And don't get me wrong, I think he's a good player, but has he been worth that much money? I'm not entirely positive. And I'm sure Stan would have liked to keep him. I'm sure, you know, I would have liked to have kept him. But for that sort of money, maybe not. And in those sort of scenarios, he's only ever going to go to the Premier League. Even if Reading had offered him that money, he was probably going to move on anyway. So this was inevitable. I noticed Danny has released a statement to the fans saying that, you know, Reading did everything they could to keep me. It's tough to leave. And, you know, he's left on good terms. I'm sure he'll get a nice round of applause whenever he returns to the Videski. And I hope he does well with Huddersfield next season. I can't see anything but relegation for them next year, just looking at that squad. I'm sorry, but, you know, again, if that's the calibre of player that they're having to sign in Danny Williams, I just don't see how they survive in the Premier League. But, you know, best of luck to them. Everyone can surprise. I'm sure lots of people are saying the same things about us when we went up in 2006. So anything can happen, and I wish you the best of luck. And thank you for what you've done for the club. Another one that could be out the door is goalkeeper Ali Al-Habsi. Now, he's been linked with some clubs in Saudi Arabia and across the Middle East. The reasons behind this, it seems to be more of a family-oriented decision for Ali. He's got his family still based in Oman. Now, it's just a case of, does he want to stay away from them for another year and continue to play a higher standard of football, with all due respect to those leagues? Or does he want to move now and sort of get back down to family life? It looks like he's being offered, if the press reports are to be believed, he's being offered a very generous financial deal as well. So that's obviously going to help, although I'm sure money isn't the primary concern with Ali. He really doesn't seem that type of player. So you can understand the dilemma he's facing. Now, Yapstam says they've identified several goalkeeping targets to replace him if he does leave. So this unfortunately looks like one that that could happen. And again, I mean, he's a player who's been voted the club's player of the season 2 years in a row. He's made the top three of the Tylersen player of the year in both those seasons as well. So, you know, we're looking at a player who is well-loved, very well-loved behind the scenes. He's a great bloke to have around the place, and he's done some fantastic work in goal as well. He's made some big saves over the past couple of seasons, admittedly with a few odd little clangers in there, but, you know, they've been far outweighed over the past, especially 18 months, by the fantastic work he's done. So it will be a blow to lose Ali. I think, again, simply from the off-field perspective, I think it'll be a blow to lose in the dressing room. But in terms of pure goalkeeping talent, I'm not overly concerned. I do think that there are a lot of very good goalkeepers out there that Reading can get that will give you a similar sort of output to Ali. Maybe not quite there, but I think certainly in that rough ballpark. I know there's been rumours of talks of the likes of Carl Darlow, who's done very well when he has played for teams like Forest, and I think he's played briefly for Newcastle as well, his parent club. So that would be not a bad move. I mean, you've got Anthony Yokola, who looked very good when we did see him in the EFL Cup and the EFL Trophy last year. So he'll be chomping at the bit. We've got a goalkeeper that's won the Under-20s World Cup as well. And we've got George Legg. So you know, lots of options. Reading have never been short of goalkeeping options, at least for the past 20 years anyway, unless you go back to that whole season we used seven keepers. But I'll leave Dave to explain that one another day. So, I mean, I hope Ali stays. I hope he does stick around. It gives us another season and we can make that transition a bit smoother. But if he does go again, it will be with a very warmest wishes and, you know, and thanks from everyone here. I'm sure every Reading fan will agree. So, again, I hope you stay, Ali. But if you do move on, it's a totally understandable decision. Anyway, that just about wraps up. I just wanted to touch on a few of the big news issues. I mean, there's lots more to get into. We've signed a new player, Mr. Pelé. So we'll get on to him. Pelé Clement, we'll get on to... Was it Clement Pelé? I can't remember off the top of my head. Anyway, it shows how much I've paid attention to our new man. But we've signed a player. We're hopefully going to get a few more in the door as well. So there'll be lots to discuss when we come back with our pre-season special. In a few weeks' time, we've had a proper chance to have a think and get a show plan out. So do keep your thoughts coming in. TheTileHurstEnd@gmail.com is the email address, at TheTileHurstEnd for your tweets. And we're at facebook.com/TheTileHurstEnd. Also, head over to youtube.com/TheTileHurstEnd if you've not yet watched the Wembley Diary we put together, which chronicles the playoff final from a perspective of five or six different fans. I very much encourage you to go and do so. You might think, oh, I don't want to relive that day. But trust me, from someone that put it together, it's actually quite therapeutic when you watch it in the end. So I encourage you to go and have a look at that. And as I said, stay tuned to thetileHurstEnd.com for lots more content. Anyway, that wraps it up. I'm going to go try and enjoy the rest of the summer, hopefully filled with lots of exciting new Reading signings. But we'll be back in a few weeks' time. Keep your eyes peeled on the Twitter feed. We'll obviously keep you updated with all lots of developments. Thank you again to Darren for the interview, and we'll speak to you soon. Come on, you Ars.
The Tile Hurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetilehurstend.com.